right. Good morning, everybody. Today is Tuesday, September 22nd, 2015. And this is Before the First Cup of Jewels here on UCY.TV. Happy Tuesday, everybody. Sorry I wasn't here yesterday. We had a global, close to global outage of Skype. They had a couple of weird issues, one where nobody could log in if you were logged out, so whoops, that was the UCY account. And the other was, if you were already logged in, everybody showed offline, so two offline people cannot connect to call, and that was my other account. So, sorry I had to run some reruns here yesterday, but there was no choice. It was pretty odd, but I have to admit it was kind of nice for a Monday morning, because you know how much I hate Mondays. It is pretty pleasant here today, 63 degrees and partly sunny. Feels like fall in upstate New York. I am already starting to see the trees with a hint of color. I was out driving the other day. I don't even know where I had to go. But there were quite a few trees, and I was like, oh, look at how pretty the tree colors are. And then I was like, oh, but that means winter is coming again. And yes, we will become prisoners in the Northeast like we do every year, and I'm not looking forward to that. So, we had quite an entertaining week of shows last week. We left off on Friday, and I know, I'm sorry, guys, you got to hear this show probably four times. So, hey, nobody's going to forget it. It was titled Obama, Mental Health, and the 21st Century Cures Act. And honestly, I don't know if I feel like digging into the 21st Century Care Act today. It was a late one last night. I got a couple other projects that are going on. One of the projects, make sure you check out Mr. Brandon Turville's brand new book that was released yesterday. I worked up a cover making Hillary Clinton look like a lizard, which was awesome. But he's also got the book for free on his website at BrandonTurville.com. So make sure you go out there and check that out. So that project is done, but we have a couple more big projects that we're working on the back end here for automation. And so I've been doing double and triple duty here trying to make something happen. I think we're going to take it easy today. Today's going to be a fun day. You can take off your thinking caps and get an extra cup of coffee and put your feet up. Anyway, back to the show on Friday, Google Mental Health 21st Century Care Act. We might get back to this tomorrow. We discovered that Google has just hired, on the very same day that Obama announced his federal initiative for behavioral insights, right? Google announces that they hired the director of the National Institute of Mental Health to come work for them. How convenient that we're going to have psychiatrists across the board developing ways to manipulate the propaganda better to get us to buy into their official narrative. In this case, it seems that they are trying to push the official narrative about technology being the savior of us all. Precision medicine, nano vaccines, RNAI, eMERGE electronic health records, right? We talked about that. And this whole national bioeconomy blueprint that's going to turn us into 21st century mad science con mad America. And please, it's not just the United States. This is happening across the board. And it almost seems to me that probably one of our biggest partners besides Israel, we found out there's all kinds of funding going to joint efforts between U.S. and Israeli scientists, but also Australia. Every time I see news out of Australia, they have some new fangled crazy thing that they're doing experimentation on. So, all right, maybe we'll get back to that 21st Century Cure Act tomorrow. I'm just looking. We watched a great video actually on Friday that we might have to repeat, but not today. We'll do that tomorrow. All right. So one of the things I want to get back to, though, we're going to look at some artificial intelligence and cyborgs and some genetically modified organisms that were pretty disturbing with some proof that came out. I don't know. I'm half brain dead. So we're going to treat today like a Monday, and tomorrow we'll kick it into high gear. We had seen a story probably back, I don't know, maybe 6-8 months ago about a Barbie, a new Barbie that talks. And I know last Christmas or the Christmas before, they had been peddling another one of these robo dogs. And the robo dogs have cameras and microphones and the most complex artificial intelligence yet in a robot. And here they're releasing it to homes at Christmas time. And all the geek sites were like buzzing over this new robo dog. And I don't remember what the dog's name was. I think it was last Christmas. And of course, every little girl who didn't have a pet wanted one of those dogs. I was like, absolutely not. No way do I want NSA spy extraordinaire in my house. And, you know, I dug into who owned the company. And honestly, I don't remember who it was. It was so long ago, and it doesn't really matter. But what was hysterical is when you dug into, like, the parent company of the robo dog, it ends up that, yes, they also make surveillance gear. No way my kid's going to have that in her bedroom. Well, it gets even better than that now because we have AI Barbie warning audio surveillance in operation. This picture of Barbie's got a t-shirt on that says, hello, hello, hello. Barbie learns to chat using artificial intelligence. Oh, yeah? The next version of Barbie might not find mass so hard after all. This week, Mattel revealed that for the first time, Barbie will be backed by artificial intelligence, a move to make the doll more lifelike. Now, this is scary. I was a big Barbie fan as a kid. And the fact that Barbie is going to be spying on little girls across the planet. I mean, where's the AI G.I. Joe? At least find out how many kids are into guns. But AI Barbie, what are you going to gather from this? In addition to the traditional hair products and accessories, the doll's belt buckle doubles as a button for activating voice recognition. And through this mechanism, children can have an interactive conversation with the classical toy. Barbie, full name, Barbara Millicent Roberts. I didn't know she had a full name. Who knows? Out 8,000 lines of dialogue can improvise with them based on the conversation that she is having with the user, according to Toy Talk CEO Oren Jacob. Toy Talk, who developed the system and will run the networks backing the AI, is a children's game developer focused on conversation with in-game characters. Jacob said that Barbie will be able to tailor her conversations with the child and talk about their favorite things, quote, just like a real friend, unquote. Now, this disturbing. You know, we've talked about Jibo, how much we hate Jibo. Yes, I'm not going to let Jibo read my kid bedtime stories. You know, recently there have been a couple stories, and I should try and get out here quick while we're talking. There have been a couple stories about, if I remember the order of WTF, God, in the morning, my brain is so brain dead. Recently, I've seen a couple stories about sex robots. Yes, Jax, if you're out there. Sex robots becoming more lifelike and people, the interactions that people can have with these new pseudo-intelligent robots can be pretty intense. It's, to me, it's sick. Yeah, banned sex robot, says leading ethicist. Here, well, I don't want to get on the sex robots, but we'll finish Barbie. Anyway, so, yeah, they'll be able to have conversations with the child and talk about favorite things just like a real friend. How about making your kid go out on the street and make a real friend? How about joining your kid up for karate or swim lessons and let them make a real friend? How about getting your kid a kitten so they have a real friend? I don't think I want my kid getting an AI Barbie to be her real friend. And you know it's September. This is coming out now. So you know that this is going to be a hot item for December. But there's absolutely no way. Why? You know, I already saw there's all kinds of research going on with IBM Watson. And IBM Watson is working on now learning language, and it is just consuming as much as it can on the internet to make its big fat brain get bigger. And one of the things that I saw that Watson was doing is that there is a speech to text tool, and you can put in your speech and it scans your speech. And when you do it, of course, it's a free tool, but you could check a box that says, yes, you may use my audio file and your decoding of it for your research purposes and add it to the database. Because, see, everything they do, they're learning from. Just like when we talked about all those DNA databases and how people are signing up for these commercial services everywhere and they're checking a box to say, yeah, you can use my data for research. But we find out what happened to all that data is that they were saying that there's got to be 800,000 to close to a million people who have checked the box to say, yes, you can use my DNA for research purposes. All of this stuff that's out there is like these fun little things is a research experiment on the background, in the background where we are guinea pigs. And I mean, these are pretty innocuous ones, like the AI. How's that going to affect you? Oh, well, you did a cheek swab to find out, you know, your ancestry tree. How is that? You know, if I already gave up my DNA, so let them use it for good, for the good of humanity. How's that going to affect anyone? And I mean, you can see how this game is playing out. They're getting all this research data for free. You're not getting anything from it. And as a matter of fact, what you're getting from it is the bag closing around our necks as they're using it to build the machine. All right, let's get back to this Barbie anyway. When a child speaks to Barbie and holds down her belt button, the doll records the audio. Listen to this. And then transmits it back to the Toy Talk server. So she must have like a real-time internet connection. I bet you the Barbie's Wi-Fi enabled. And she's transmitting data and receiving it real-time with your child. And who the hell knows who Toy Talk is? I'm going to find out that they're connected to some Israeli intelligence division. Transmits it back to the Toy Talk server. And according to Jacobs, the server runs a decision engine that uses natural language processing to choose an appropriate response. And he describes it as a map with a fork in the road. And based on the number of heuristics, the AI navigates the road and arrives at an optimal response. We've heard the phrase decision engine. Yes, they're called algorithms. In the mainstream before, Bing, Microsoft search engine, touted as a decision engine at its launch in 2009, has an ability to judge relevance. Audio recordings are then stored on Toy Talk servers. Oh my God. Audio recordings are then stored on Toy Talk servers. Available to teams that work on improving the speech recognition platform and to the child's parents. Parents can listen to, delete, and even share recordings on the site. And yes, just like I had guessed, the doll will be available in November, just in time to chat through the holiday season. How insane is that? And so let's make it useful for the parents. We'll make it a parental spy tool so we can listen in on Joni or Johnny's private Barbie playing time. And, of course, researchers who want to make the speech recognition platform better. This is creepier than shit. Barbie learns to chat using artificial intelligence. Say hello to Hello Barbie. Oh, where is this world coming to? So it's, you know, yeah, the new Barbie narc. Otto in chat. That's about it. Or, you know, I mean, this thing, yeah, push the button on the belt, but it's just like Google's not listening to every word that's said over your computer when your microphone is plugged in. You know what I mean? And we know they are. They have a patent. They can open your microphone at any time, and they are using that to what? Oh, quote unquote, sell you ads. But we know that there's another backdoor funnel that's going direct to the NSA. So they could just open that mic. This isn't going to be any different. They want a microphone in every pot. All right, we might as well read this. It's only quarter after, so we have some time. Let's read the story about sex bots. This came out of RT. Ben, sex robot, says leading ethicist. And there's a pretty horrifying looking love doll in a picture at the top. It says a leading robot ethicist has launched a campaign calling for a ban on the development of sex robots. Dr. Kathleen Richardson, a robotics expert at De Montfort University in Leicester, England, warns that sex bots could contribute to the systemic dehumanization of women and children. That's true. I don't know. This is pretty disturbing, especially then if you decide that you're going to have a relationship with a sex bot. Quote, sex robots seem to be a growing focus in the robotics industry. And this is a robotics expert from a university. And the models that they draw on, how they will look, what roles they would play are very disturbing indeed, she told the BBC. Richardson explained that her campaign against sex robots is not anti-sex, but rather anti-exploitation. Technology is not neutral. It's informed by class, race, and gender, and political power informs us. Political power informs the development of technology, she told the Washington Post. That's why we can do something about it. These robots will contribute to more sexual exploitation. Oh, to a robot, I guess. I think we should kill all the robots, honestly. Make them sex bots. I don't know. I'm not about ethics for robots, because when they become sentient, I hope that they're in a real shitty place. I don't have any mercy for robots. They want us to make them like another living organism that at some point we're going to give laws and rules to and allow them to participate in society. I mean, we've read some of that. And they're really talking about that now. These bioethicists, screw that. Robots are some mad scientist creation. And for as squishy and cuddly or Barbie-ish or, you know, friendish, they're going to make them Jibo friend, Barbie friend. I don't care. Kill all robots. If there's anything in the future that you're going to remember me saying, no robot is a good robot. And maybe if he gives us all the keys and tells us how to destroy the drones. But no robot is a good robot. Says, though the sex bots currently being manufactured are still relatively primitive, except in Japan, Richardson is worried that the first step is to be something more sinister, which I don't know what that means. It's a new and emerging technology, so let's nip it in the bud, she says. Not butt, bud. The industry certainly appears to be picking up steam. The sex doll company True Companion launched Roxy, the world's first sex robot, several years ago. And however, anxiety over AI's potential dangers are not uncommon, even among industry bigwigs. Tesla Motors, Elon Musk, right? We've heard about all these. Wrote of the risk of something seriously dangerous is happening within the next 5 years time frame. 10 years at most, and they have warned about releasing the demon, I think he said, and that they were going to make us their pets eventually. Theoretical physicist Stephen Hawking warned the development of full artificial intelligence could spell the end of the human race. And that is true. I don't think that it's a good thing at all. All right. So now let's take a little detour. I don't know. Sex bots are something good for first thing Tuesday morning. But let's get into some seriousness now. A story came out of Machines Like Us. And we've talked about this many, many, many times before, how it doesn't exist out there. Synthetic biology needs robust safety mechanisms. And I think we should even go beyond robust safety mechanisms. We've seen how the DOD and the CDC have handled virulent pathogens. And their track record isn't too good. They've been shipping it all over the planet. Oops, it wasn't killed properly. Now we got plague out there too. Whoops. Don't worry about it. We'll have some newfangled vaccines here pretty shortly that we can sneak into your body without you knowing. But apparently there's some scientists that are seriously worried about this. I say we just get rid of synthetic biology altogether. Synthetic biology needs robust safety mechanisms. It won't save us, people. Ethics and technology hold the key to success of synthetic biology. Yeah, if we were an ethical society with ethical scientists and there wasn't a dangling carrot for mad control freaks that want to create control down to the cellular level. If none of that existed and we lived in this benevolent society, maybe, just maybe, ethics and technology could hold the keys to success, but not in this incarnation of planet Earth. All right, let's get to the story. They're going to try and sell us on this. Targeted cancer treatments, toxicity sensors, and living factories. Yes, that's the nanotech we've talked about. It's the desktop nanofactory. Synthetic biology has the potential to revolutionize science and medicine. But before the technology is ready for real-world applications, More attention needs to be paid to its safety and stability, says experts in a review article published in the Current Opinion of Chemical Biology. Synthetic biology involves engineering microbes like bacteria to program them to behave in certain ways. It's way more than that, but okay. Very simplistic example. For example, bacteria can be engineered to glow when they detect certain molecules and can be turned into tiny factories that produce chemicals. I thought I just saw some sort of synthetic application where they made a bacteria that can produce THC as part of its chemical process. Look out. I'm sure that biopharma is going to find a use for that. Synthetic biology has, however, now reached a stage where it is ready to move out of the lab and into the real world to be used in patients and in the field. And yes, this is this 21st Century Care Act. They have all this mad science now, chomping at the bit, sitting at the borders, waiting to get out. But, oh, there's all these ethics laws. You can't test this shit in people. You never tested in people before, and it's like mad science. So, hey, don't worry about it. We'll pass the 21st Century Care Act, and we'll get rid of all the FDA protections for making sure that it's safe, and we'll tell them that the reason we need this act out there is because for all these years, we've had cures in the lab and they couldn't get out because the FDA was standing in the way of innovation by wanting to do safety testing. And so little Johnny died of the measles. He didn't get the cure, the new nanopatch cure that transdermally injects him with little nanobots running around to deliver RNAi payloads full of poison. No. But you know what? This new 21st Century Care Act will fix all that. Because we'll get rid of any safety testing and we'll be able to do it in small groups to people who want to step right up for the newfangled medicine. And then, hey, research and development is free. We have real-life guinea pigs. And it'll all be good. And people will get saved until 20 years down the line when that arm grows out of the back of their head. But they won't know that it was us. We'll tell them it was the radiation in the environment. All right. Synthetic biology has now reached a stage to where it is ready to move out of the lab and into the real world to be used in patients and in the field. And according to Professor Pamela Silver, one of the authors of the article from Harvard Medical School in the U.S., this move means that researchers should increase focus on safety of engineered microbes and biological systems like the human body. Wait, what? So this Harvard Medical School doctor says that researchers just now, we haven't been doing this for 20 years in the lab, no, just now, should increase their focus on the safety of engineered microbes and biological systems like the human body or like the environment. DARPA lady who wants to push a button and be able to terraform problem places on the Earth first as a beta test before we terraform Mars. Yeah, those types of biological systems. Historically, she says, molecular biologists engineered microbes as an industrial organism to produce different molecules. The more we discover about microbes, the easier it was to program them. But now we've reached a very exciting phase in the synthetic biology where we are ready to apply what we've developed in the real world. And this is where safety is vital. How can you be working with all this stuff and there haven't been ethics or safety laws, not just rules, laws in place, very stringent laws, bottle all over the planet. But whoops, oh, what? Yeah, places like Monsanto, Dow, Syngenta have been spraying mad science already all over our soil. In a lot of cases, nobody even knows it. We found out about those Oxitec mosquitoes and moths being released in the wild. Whoops, test, see what happens. They didn't even do an environmental impact study in New York, and they released it near organic farms, which now screws all the organic farmers. All right, back to the story. Microbes have an impact on health, and like we found out over many shows, we talked about this on Friday, with the microbiome in your gut bacteria, the vagus nerve that connects directly to your brain, the ability for microbes to have a direct influence on our behavior, our mood, our chemical expression in our brains. This is frightening, and this is one of the things I just hope you realize. Scientists are very, very, what's the word I'm thinking of? They're focusing on the microbiome and your epigenetics to be able to get control of those for what? Oh, on all in the name of curing disease. But I think there's more sinister plans as well. When you find out DARPA is so totally invested in this brain project and manipulating brain chems and making super soldiers and being able to insert and remove memories. I mean, we talked about all that stuff last week again. When you look at all that and you realize that the brain could be influenced just by microbes. Microbes that what? Oh, edible vaccines. Yes, microbes that can be ingested, encapsulated in genetically modified foods such as what? Oh, tomatoes, potatoes, apples, bananas. What else was there? There were five pieces of food that they were messing with at some point or another in history to make edible vaccines. But they encapsulate whatever they want to get through your digestive system because the mucosal lining of the small intestine is a really good way for them to cross that blood-brain barrier and get whatever it is inside of your body and access to the vagus nerve, which, like I said, connects directly to your brain. So I think that there is definitely an alter agenda here, messing with synthetic biology and reprogramming bacteria. Microbes have an impact on health, and the way they interact with animals is being ever more revealed by what? Oh, microbiome research. Studies on all the microbes that live in the body, and this is making them easier and faster to engineer. Ding, ding, ding. Scientists are now able to synthesize whole genomes, making it technically possible to build a microbiome from scratch. Now that is frightening. I mean, they even found out, and I know we kind of laughed about the fecal transplant. I actually just heard someone else mention that the other day. We've talked about that a few times over the years. But then we found a story about a woman who had that horrible disorder that she had no other choice but to go for a fecal transplant to try to correct her microbiota dysfunction. And they discovered that it changed her personality. And they really believe it has to do with the fact that your gut bacteria has a direct connect to the brain. It has a direct connect to the expression of chemicals that are released in your brain. And it is very possible that transplanting different microbiota into your gut could actually change your literal personality. Anyway, back to the story. Ultimately, this is the future. This will be the way that we program microbes and other cell types, says Dr. Silver. Microbes have small genomes, so they are not too complex to build from scratch. And this gives us huge opportunities to design them to do specific jobs. And we can also program in safety mechanisms. Phew. Well, maybe you should have been working on that for a long time. Self-destruct in 36 seconds. One of the big safety issues associated with engineering microbial genomes is the transfer of their genes, whoops, to wild microbes. Yeah, genies out of the bottle. Microbes are able to transfer segments of their DNA during reproduction, which leads to genetic evolution. And one key challenge associated with synthetic biology is preventing this transfer between engineered genomes and wild microbial genomes. It's kind of like planting genetically engineered corn crops right next to the organic corn crops and then saying, whoops, we contaminated all your crops with our GMO pollen. I mean, of course it happens in nature. That's why none of these genies should have ever been let out of the bottle. Because they're acting like, well, if we program in safety mechanisms now, all's going to be good. But don't think that they haven't been doing experiments on this for 20 plus years already. And I don't know if in particular this experiment, but man, science experiments everywhere. And this is long. Safety should have been at the very beginning. Like, hey, if we were going to create artificial life forms here on Earth and put in extra X and Y proteins into the DNA strands to, like, literally create alien life on planet Earth, shouldn't we find a way to make sure that it's only got a lifespan of like a week or something? I just don't get. They ran ahead, didn't think, didn't care about the destruction of biological life on Earth or the usurpation of biological life by synthetic. But now we worry about it as we're ready to open the doors and let the invasion go on the planet. All right, well, listen to this. Like, I believe this. There are already several levels of safety infrastructure in place. And yes, like the level 4 biolab that the CDC and the DOD have used that stuff still got out from because we have nincompoops that are behind the switch. There are already several levels of safety infrastructure in place to ensure that what? Oh, no unethical research is done. And who's defining the subjectivity of unethical? Unethical to you might be different than unethical to me. You know, I have issues with them putting nanowires into the pupa of a moth while it's still in larval stage. So when it grows to an adult, it's got these remote control wires embedded into its brain that they can then use a joystick to make its wings flap. That, to me, I have a major ethical problem with that. You might say it's just a moth, but it's still a living creature. So, you know, who's defining ethical? So there are already several kinds of safety infrastructure in place to ensure no unethical research is done, and the kinds of organisms that are allowed in laboratory. Like what? Engineering a more virulent bird flu like they did not once but twice? Yeah, like those kinds of organisms. But let's focus now, according to Dr. Silver, is on the technology to ensure safety. And when scientists build synthetic microbes, they can program in mechanisms that they call, oh, yes, the kill switch. We should have thought of that one. Kill switches that cause the microbes to self-destruct if their environment changes in certain ways. And that is, of course, until they evolve. Because remember, they are quote-unquote living organisms that do evolve. We even saw robots evolving as they were building next generations of themselves. It's called evolutionary robotics, and they saw it happen. Just having robots with simple AI building the next generation of themselves, there was evolution that happened. So like I said, yeah, the kill switch that works today, but in three generations from now, it may not. Once they've crossbred with biology, microbial sensors and drug delivery systems can be shown to work in a lab, but researchers are not yet sure how they will function in a human body or a large-scale bioreactor. And remember, we read a story about that the other day. DARPA wants to turn your whole human body into a bioreactor. So they can put stuff into it and have your body then create whatever type of immunity that you need. They're just going to fill you full of nanobots. Engineered organisms have a huge potential, but they will only be useful if proven to be reliable, predictable, and cost-effective. And today, engineered bacteria are already in clinical trials for cancer. Of course, it's always the cancer cure. That, I warned you guys a long time ago, that was how they were going to sell it to us, the cure for cancer. Get everyone to buy on because we have the cure for cancer. Look at what a great technology this is. We're going to cure everybody with our little nanorobot factories that we've just inserted. Not even with a needle anymore. You ate it. Or you got your nano patch and it went in transdermally, but you'll be cured. So just take it. Just take it. And this is only the beginning, she says. The rate at which this field is moving forward is incredible. You know, that's the other thing that gets me. You hear some of these interviews, and these researchers will come out and they're like, well, you know, this stuff is kind of science fiction still. Don't worry because, you know, we're nowhere near where you gotta worry at. But then you talk to the researchers, okay? And these researchers are saying, oh my God, this is happening so fast. Like I never thought we'd be seeing at this point in time technology as extreme as this. And I'm seeing this time and time and time again. I'm telling you people, the time is now for the red alert. This stuff is already in us. Been coming in us through our food from the early 90s. It's in our air. Who knows where else it could be? It's in the vaccines. I'm sure of it. At least some of the new ones. We found out that there were a couple. The hepatitis B that they give newborns is a synthetic vaccine. Gardasil's got virus-like particles in it. That's a synthetic vaccine. You know, who knows what else? They don't need to label anything anymore or have it tested for safety, apparently. It's a pretty scary time we live in. Anyway, back to this doctor. The rate at which this field is moving forward is incredible, and I don't know what happened. Maybe it's the mass media coverage, maybe the charisma, but she says we are on the verge of something very exciting. Once we've figured out how to make genomes more quickly and easily, synthetic biology will change the way we work as researchers and even the way we treat disease. And don't forget, we got the CRISPR-Cas9 drives where we can cut and paste DNA like it's Legos and make new life. So it's not too long. They are already messing with all of that stuff in the lab. And I think we got a problem, Clyde. And if not to add insult to injury, robot swarm. Scientists are working to harness the power of the insect world. And we've talked about this many, many, many times. The hive mentality. Yes. The hive mentality is inspiring the latest advances in technology. And the U.S. military, of course, is already experimenting with swarms of robotic boats and aircraft. And I also saw with their new drone technology, too, where there's going to be all these little drones and swarms. And you know something else? If anybody remembers my nightmare, the little triangular thingies that I'm pretty sure now were drones shooting lasers. Yes, they have swarms of little drones that are being developed right now. And I also just saw that they are talking by 2020, they're going to have laser guns on fighter aircraft. Another 5 years, people, that dream might actually come true. Swarms of little drones shooting us with lasers. I don't like that at all. Last night I had like this realization while I was reading this laser story about putting them onto fighter jets. And I was like, oh my God, here we go, man. Just not good. This is just not good at all. Somebody come up with a way to make a microwave pulse rifle or something, man. We got to find a way en masse to make them all drop out of the sky because the invasion of the drones is on its way. Don't forget, we got all these commercial drones that the FAA is in the process of approving applications, and there's thousands of them that have been approved already. It's not going to be too long before we start seeing beta tests all over the place. Amazon doing, I don't remember what it was, 1 hour delivery, something crazy like that. All right, anyway. The hive mentality is inspiring the latest advances in technology, and the U.S. military is already experimenting with swarms of robotic boats and aircraft. Armies of robots are already here. They're mostly just very small, and don't forget nanotech, because they also can live as swarms, and we can't see them. As robotics advance, scientists continue to take cues from the natural world, whether it is by building a robot out of material from animals like cloned rat muscle or jellyfish matter. I haven't heard of that one yet. That's pretty disturbing. So there's your ethics for you. Or building them in imitation dogs or cats. And now those scientists are learning to beyond being one of the scariest terms outside of a Terminator film is the name roboticists give to robots that can coordinate behavior between multiple bodies acting as a group. This is the Borg, by the way. Thomas Schmickel of the Artificial Life Laboratory of the University of Graz in Austria points out that robots as complex as humans or even dogs are a long way off. Oh, yeah. But the possibility in the insect world for simple animals to behave in ingenious ways as a group can provide some insight in how to simulate artificial intelligence. Yes, like swarms of robo bees stinging you or using their little HD surveillance cameras, or, hey, pollinating crops, don't worry about it. All right, Schmickel's current crop of robots work mostly underwater, and yes, DARPA has their whole underwater drone, unmanned underwater drone project as well, that all live in a mothership. Look that one up. That was last year. Schmickel's current crop of robots work mostly underwater, and his swarm of as many as 20 swimming robots, all named Jeff, imitates a shoalfish, and with the EU-supported Collective Cognitive Robots Project, he hopes to develop not just hardware algorithms, but other software to make group behavior smarter. Monolithic non-scaling technology is currently hitting the wall everywhere, he says. He points out that computers are now often have multiple central processing units, and that swarms are not they're not necessarily armies of robot bugs. No, we talk about the Internet of Things, and yeah, we haven't talked about that in a while, but that is coming as well. Everything is being internet enabled, including Barbie. Well, this might be perceived as another kind of swarm. The Internet of Things will be the swarm that lives around you, I guess. Schmickel mentioned the Philae lander, which touched down on a comet only to fail at its attempt to drill into the surface and collect samples. Imagine we had done that with 5 or 10 smaller, cheaper probes. Not only would the total risk of failure be lower because we'd have 5 or 10, but you could also collect data from different places. So yes, many little robots apparently are better than one big nasty robot. The U.S. military has come to much the same conclusion with respect to combat missions. Swarm robotics has become not just viable, but a cornerstone of coming drones. Unmanned aerial vehicles in military parlance, like the Navy's Locust, which is the low-cost UAV swarming technology, and that's some of the stuff that I was looking at the other day. In terms of bug behavior, cyborg cockroaches, and yeah, we've looked at them too, have been on the open market for a few months now. Wannabe mad scientists can purchase a DIY kit from a few different companies. They'll all require the user to supply his or her own roaches. Now, there is a question of ethics. Let's make our own cyborg cockroach at home for Christmas. And little Johnny won't turn into a mad scientist as you're teaching him to torture another living creature. God, this is what? How sick is this? Now, though, scientists are working to make more flexible, durable parts from living materials. Recently, muscle tissues from rats and even biosynthetic tissue from jellyfish have been used to make parts for robots. Chris Atkinson, professor at the Robotics Institute at Carnegie Mellon University, said that often natural sensors are superior to what people can build, and animals' ability to feel, smell, and hear may become a larger part of robotic science. Yeah, like what? Implanting rat brains into your next robo-warrior. They were already working on stuff like that. One could argue, says Atkinson, that they are, quote, an analog computer in some sense. Well, the biological versus the synthetic, the analog versus the digital. The biological is being usurped. It will be enslaved by this. Atkinson points to the Ames test in which, quote, bacteria are used to test the mutagenic potential of chemical compounds, unquote. Bacteria are spread on agar, that's that yellow gooey stuff you put into a petri dish, with a little food and a chemical that may or may not cause a mutation. And when the food runs out, the only way the bacteria remains is if the chemical is allowed, has allowed them to mutate so they could live without food. This would be an extremely complex computation to be done with computers. So let's bastardize biology and make it work for us. So there you go. I don't know. Robot swarms to me are probably one of the scarier nightmares that I've had. But it looks like my time is getting short here. So we're going to hop to a story that I saw Heather Callaghan post this weekend out of her publication, Natural Blaze. We've talked about GM foods. We've talked about genetic modification and how there's lots of evidence now that not only does some of the GM products that are sliced and diced into the GM food and the GM animals get into our bodies, but also how it's passed on to offspring. We've looked at some of this also with DNA from foreign organisms in vaccinations. And that Stanford scientists now discovering that fetal DNA fragments that are in some of the vaccines actually attach to the DNA of children that get injected. It's pretty frightening, and it's mutating our humanness. It's mutating our biology. Well, check this out. We also found out with glyphosate and the bees, the honeybees, Dr. Huber. This new story here, September 20th from 2 days ago. Goats fed genetically modified soy have altered DNA, milk, and offspring, says a study. If you haven't yet ditched GMO from your diet, you may want to consider doing so. You know, and this is just as we find what were they genetically engineering now to give poor children to get their vaccines out of animals. We just saw something the other day. I mean, of course we know about the genetically modified goat that had malaria vaccine in its milk, but there was something. Oh, all the edible vaccines. They were doing it to food now, not just animals. According to a study published earlier this year, goats fed transgenic GM soy feed have altered DNA, and the milk produced by the mothers is of lower quality, which affects the offspring. Kid goats were studied both in vivo and postmortem, and what researchers determined is not good. It was found that kids which were fed, not kids, children, kids as in baby goats, which were fed genetically modified soy, and they, I mean, the majority, 90% of all soy in the United States is GMO. So, and soy mimics estrogen. So if you're feeding soy to your kid, you got to screw loose. Do not feed GM soy to your kid. And I'd say any soy for that matter, because it's all soy that's an estrogen mimicker. But since 90% of all soy in the United States that's produced is genetically modified, there's a good chance that anytime you get soy here, it's going to be GM soy. It was found that kids which fed on GM soy had both DNA fragments that were not supposed to be there, i.e. not normally found in goat milk, and the immunoglobulin concentrations was altered. In addition, the colostrum, which is the pre-milk in all mammals that provides the incredible immunological defense to offspring, also had significantly lower levels of both proteins and fats. This is just one more reason individuals and populations everywhere need to reconsider their stance on genetically modified crops. See, they don't want us to know that it passes down from the mother to the baby, but Dr. Huber discovered that already with GM alfalfa, and they found that it passed the placenta. And then it was getting into the baby cattle and horses. Caused all kinds of reproductive problems and uptakes of minerals. You weren't getting proper nutrition. And this is just sick. The baby goats came from mothers fed GM soy, also had altered physical traits. For instance, the significant height difference at the chest and withers than their non-GMO fed counterparts was observed. And of course, it would be irresponsible to jump to conclusions from one study, but this is not the first report in which genetically modified foods were found to alter DNA, which is a very concerning find. Because, hey, you know what? A goat is a goat, a tomato is a tomato, a potato is a potato. Rubber stamp it with all of these former Monsanto affiliates now working in our food safety divisions in the United States government. We don't need to study this. It's just a goat. As Natural Society shares, quote, morphological and biochemical changes were reported in male rats fed GMO corn, and we did know that. And what does this mean for humans in locations like the United States where, hey, everything is genetically modified because we're friends to Monsanto? According to geneticist David Suzuki, and we heard this clip before, humans are a part of a, quote, massive genetic experiment, and one has a right to be concerned. Ding, ding. All right, I guess that's where we're going to pick it up tomorrow because we are down to the last 15 seconds of the show. Make sure you stick around. Mr. Kevin Blanch is up next. And then tonight, it's Tuesday, right? Yes, tonight, 7 p.m. live, Game On with Ron. 8, JJ something, somebody will be there. 9, primer time. 10, Geo Engineering. 11, SMU. All right, guys, have a nice Tuesday.